Hear that? That's what cooked when you order juicy beef sounds like. The steaming hug of two slices of melted cheese, the crunch of tangy pickles and sliced onions, all topped with a toasted sesame seed bun. That's the sound of a quarter pounder with cheese.
Fresh beef at participating U.S. McDonald's. Excludes Alaska, Hawaii, and U.S. territories.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.
This episode of Untold Stories is sponsored by SafePal. You'll hear more about them later on in this episode.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon. Good evening. I am your host, Charlie Schrem, and you're listening and watching another epic episode of Untold Stories. We're together twice a week. We get to dive deep, ask the important questions, the why, the philosophy and the ideology behind the technology, the mathematics, the whole part of the experiment, like the social part of the socioeconomic experiment that we're in. We talk a lot about that. To truly understand how this movement came to be, the early people involved, the ones who are trailblazing it right now, the businesses behind them, the community, the miners, the different stakers, DAO governance holders, kind of everyone in between. And I'm really excited today. We have Alan Silbert and Itay Avneri from INX. Thank you guys so much for coming on Untold Stories today.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
I just want to give a little bit of background about both of you. Prior to joining INX, Alan, you were you founded a great company, I remember, called BitPremier back in 2014. It was like a Bitcoin luxury marketplace. And it was really the first place that you can just sit and browse for luxury items priced in Bitcoin. And this was before the Bitcoin price was like anywhere near explosive where it is now. So this was all more of like hopium. One day, houses were priced in like the thousands of Bitcoin, but now you can get like a castle for maybe a few hundred Bitcoin or whatever.
Yeah, you know, it was a lot of fun for sure. We didn't sell a ton because everybody, you know, was smartly, you know, hodling their Bitcoin so that, you know, the crown jewel was we sold a villa in Bali.
I remember that.
Yeah, at that time, I think Bitcoin was $600. You know, me and my smart foresight. So I sold most of the commission I sold most of my Bitcoins for US dollars out of that commission. You know, that was a smart move. But it was an interesting project. It was a lot of fun. You know, my background was in commercial banking, and I was in the legacy finance world for 20 years. And then you know, my brother introduced me to Bitcoin in 2013. And, you know, we both put our heads together and we're like, there's no like luxury platform out there. So it doesn't exist yet for people to go and like sell their homes and their Rolexes and Ferraris. So I was working at Capital One Bank at the time, and we launched BitPremier. I did it as like a side gig. At some point, stay away. It was fun. at one point, like, the Department of Justice came and visited me and just, you know, just to let me know they were watching me to make sure there's no money laundering. But
well, that's interesting because your new business now, INX, that you and Itay are running are you know, is very regulator friendly. And we were talking earlier, and I said you guys almost like predicted, you guys predicted security tokens way back in 2018. When people were really focusing on ICOs back then. And so this was very, very valuable and almost like amazing foresight, because you kind of like planted your flag in the ground and said, this is what the future is going to be. Itay, you bring over 20 years of executive management experience into your role as COO here. You led the adoption of the shift to cryptocurrency as role as CEO for Invest.com in Israel. You've worked and ran like financial services companies and all over the regulated world. So you guys really understood that. Like, I almost want to go back to the beginning when INX was first conceived and you guys thought, like, what would the 5-year roadmap look like? And here you are. Today's an amazing day. You launched INX version 1. Today, it's like almost a huge vindication for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's so going back to the beginning, you know, our founder, Shai Datika, I mean, it was the ICO kind of pump and dump craze that founded our company. That's the genesis of this company. Shai was from the trading world, FX trading world. And he saw the ICO insanity and then the ICO bubble and kind of knew that a lot of these ICOs were just kind of vaporware or didn't have much behind them or didn't have much legal standing, and that there was probably going to be some kind of reckoning or implosion, and thought there was a better way to do it. So that's when we started on our route with the SEC to do our security token IPO. Shai approached the SEC and they of course thought he was insane, and we did things a little bit backwards. We were trying to IPO as a pre-operational company, but lo and behold, took 953 days, but nobody's counting, with the SEC going back and forth, 15 to 20 different iterations, for a full-blown security token IPO. So yeah, we got that done. We closed it out last year and raised about $83 million. So Shai's somewhat of a visionary and kind of sees things coming down the road. And we got a good head start on it.
I mean, you're talking about securities regulations that have been around and protected customers and consumers and investors and builders. And, you know, largely you can credit that the financial system that we're in today, the better parts of it are kind of kept stable, you know, by all these protections and different rules and regulations, whether you like them or you don't. They're there for a reason and you have to follow them. And so a token, at least this is like 4 years ago, almost 5 years ago, a token back then, you know, the idea of like even a non-fungible token that you can, you know, almost like allow those certain type of regulations. And I want to ask you what those things are. That didn't even exist back then. So how did you like sit with the SEC and kind of go through what almost what like a new token standard would need to look like?
Yeah, they were somewhat well versed in Bitcoin and Ethereum, but it was a big education process. I was kind of hoping that we, you know, as a blockchain kind of purist, that we would have things, you know, like they wanted to push us to have it like a regulated transfer agent. You know, we were hoping that, you know, look, we have like the Ethereum blockchain, which is what our token runs on. You know, the blockchain is like the best transfer agent. It's real time record keeping, but like that wasn't good enough for them. They kept pushing back. We ended up with a compromise, which was this, the ERC 1404 standard, so that if grandma loses her keys, we can, we can pull the tokens back and reissue them. It allows us more flexibility, kind of used to what the regulators are used to seeing with like, you know, you have a stock certificate and you lose it and you sign an affidavit and get it replaced. It was a lot of compromises to kind of meet these, the new world with the securities laws from 1933. It took a lot of patience, a lot of compromises. In the end, we prevailed.
So I just went to this website, ERC1404.org. Tell me more about this standard and what is it about this token that is different that makes the SEC more comfortable? And Itai, feel free to jump in. I have questions for individually, I end up doing the show. I get down in a rabbit hole. I'm like excited about this. My questions were different.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Timeline wise, Alan joined the company before me and basically was very involved in the prospectus and the process with the SEC. And he knows, the full prospectus, 470 pages long, more or less by heart. So there is no one really else better than Alan to describe this process at that point.
Itai is so lucky that he missed that part of the company's evolution. Came for the important part, which is the operations.
No, I joined immediately, I think, after INEX got the approval from the SEC to start the IPO. And then within 6 months, more or less, we raised the $83-85 million. It was a big, big step forward in translating this vision that Chai had into reality, but not only because it's the security security token and the raise itself and the SEC approval. It's a new, and we're saying we are pioneering a new digital economy, because in essence, what happened is that you had this enormous community, and we are very grateful for our community that stood behind us and pushed this this IPO, blockchain IPO, and got us to where we are today. And in a way, we are shaping a new investor community, a community that wants to invest in digital securities or security tokens, that can invest in security tokens with crypto and not fiat money. That understand the benefits of a security token. For example, in our case, 40% of the company profits will be distributed between the token holders, and they get other rights and benefits when holding the annual token. Altogether, we built this new way to raise capital, which is even more, and this is, again, 3 years ago or 2 years ago, the IPO almost, And even more important today, when you see interest rates all over the world are going up, and even before we understand the specific attribute of the INEX token that is relevant for other projects in the digital economy space, like CBDC, central bank digital currency. But we started a whole new discussion with that. We can start.
I mean, what is the INX platform look like right now? You're talking about an app that potential investors can come in, get prove their accreditation, get KYC, and essentially their Ethereum address gets whitelisted to be able to buy, sell, and trade in digital securities.
So we have two platforms today, and we are releasing. I mentioned at the beginning we're releasing INX One as the first version, but we have two operational platforms today. One for cryptocurrencies with the money transmitter licenses across 42 island or 41 US states today.
Or 42 states and territories. Yeah.
Yes. And we have the securities trading platform, security token trading platform. And each one of the platforms are operational and are live. And as a user, as a customer, you have to go through KYC twice. You cannot trade security tokens, or you couldn't trade security tokens with cryptocurrencies side by side. And basically, the biggest project that we undertook in the past, more or less a year, I would say, is to merge those two platforms together. Now, it's a different license, it's a different regulation behind security tokens and cryptocurrencies. It's a different customer experience, because on the security side, you have to link your MetaMask wallet in order to trade the tokens. And on the crypto side, we are basically providing the custody services. So you don't have to link your wallet. So it's a complete CeFi versus a semi-CeFi, semi-DeFi environment. And those two platforms come together now and merge into one. This is INX One. And we will go live with INX One by the end of the week, this week. And it will be the first and only platform today where you can trade both asset classes together under the same brand, the same roof. Yeah.
That's unbelievable. Congratulations.
And you could also, as an issuer, raise money on this platform. So our full solution is primary offering services, including the listing and trading of cryptocurrencies and security tokens. Everything under one platform. You have to onboard once, seamless experience. You fund your account with crypto, and you link your MetaMask wallet to the platform. Trade securities.
Guys, I am so excited to talk about our newest presenting sponsor, SafePal. SafePal is an all-in-one solution. You got a beautiful hardware wallet. You have this amazing fireproof cipher. You got a mobile wallet, an extension wallet similar to MetaMask. You're talking about an all-in-one solution for all of your crypto needs. Founded in 2018, SafePal is a Binance Labs-backed Singapore-based company, the venture arm, where their mission is to make crypto secure and simple for everyone. You got cross-chain swapping, trading services, and more. SafePal supports over 40 different blockchains. I mean, check this out. Look at this. If you back up your private seed in this beautiful metal SafePal backup here and you keep it in your safe, fires or water or nothing degrading over time, you should not be backing up your crypto on pieces of paper. I mean, look at this. Look at the S1 here. It's so cool. This is the hardware wallet. You're talking, I'm used to using the Trezor or the Ledger wallet, but SafePal is a lot better because not only do you get the hardware wallet and the backup cipher, but you also get the mobile wallet, the extension on your Google Chrome or whatever Firefox you use. So it all works together. You don't have to worry about man-in-the-middle attacks and everything like that. You can go to safepal.com, use the coupon code Charlie, and you'll get any of these amazing products. The extension wallet is free, the mobile wallet is free, the hardware wallet and the backup are really, really well priced. It's all super safe and secure, and I love it. I mean, there's no other way you should be using your crypto than SafePal.
Having like kind of seen the rise of security tokens, do you guys think this will usher in a world of more revenue sharing tokens?
Well, it's kind of, you know, the sky is kind of the limit with security tokens. You know, you can structure them any way you want, really. That's kind of the beauty of it. You can give people revenue share. You can give people profit share, like our token. You can give them voting rights, not voting rights. You know, our token holders are kind of above equity in our capital stack. So they get first liquidation rights to our self-insurance fund, for instance. We have $35 million sitting in a self-insurance fund that the token holders would have first rights to if something happened or if we had a change of control. So, you can structure things infinite different ways in different use cases. You know, you can tokenize buildings, you can tokenize royalty streams. There's a lot of interesting things in the pipeline that we see. Yeah, you know, one of these Premier League soccer teams called Burnley is doing a full blown IPO because they want to do like a fan token. So you know they have their fans, hundreds of thousands or millions, and so the fans would get with their token a portion of game day revenues and you know merch sales and things like that. So you know it's especially amazing when you have a captive community like a soccer team or a football team or. It's why we did our token the way that we did, is we wanted to make it like a community first company. And, you know, we see our INX token holders as a very important part of this company and our community. And they're kind of like a captive marketing crew. Yeah. And, you know, they like kind of live and breathe our company. So it's an amazing concept.
Someone gave me a script idea the other day. If any of my listeners want to write this script and I'll make this into a film called The Tokenized Man. Or the tokenized woman, where basically someone like tokenizes themselves and everyone and all their token holders are like, what's going on? But that's the rabbit hole. You know, that's where it can go down. Speaking of which, by the way, side note, I have October 7th. And this is all to my listeners. We have a film release coming out in theaters. Called Ask Me to Dance, the movie that my wife was in. So make sure you guys all go to theaters and get your butts in seats. But I'll talk about that in a few weeks. That's a complete side note. But back to this. I mean, you're talking about, you know, the ability to tokenize things and securitize things that were otherwise without blockchain technology not really securitizable. Like just even revenue sharing of like people blending the interest rates of mortgages together and things like
that. Yeah. The blockchain, it avails you to different kind of things you couldn't do before. And, you know, the legacy world operates on technology that's decades old. And, you know, lucky for us, there's different things that we can do. And, you know, people could own a very, very small piece of INX, you know, or not own them, but a part of the profits. And, you know, the general public can do that, and they can do it without going through, very difficult hoops that a legacy world would have had.
How many other securities tokens are trading on the platform?
And right now we have 6 tokens trading.
Including the INX token. We started a primary raise for a Chinese company, Truckball, a few weeks ago. And I believe that by the end of the week, we'll start another probably few raises, maybe 2, maybe 3. This is the plan. And we're working very hard to build this pipeline. And you're speaking about different companies or issuers and the tokenomics behind them. Crazy to see how many companies from different industries that all come and basically brainstorm around the different options and the tokenomics that will be relevant for their community. And entertainment industry is definitely high on the list.
I'm working on a project actually doing potentially like securitizing the revenue share of securitized assets, but we'll talk about that another time. It's some really cool stuff. But I wanted to ask if you think, you know, the current landscape of the crypto companies that we're in, you know, we're in a very precarious year when it comes to regulations and what's going to be coming out when it comes to who will be regulating what. Like you said, there are different regulatory bodies that are regulating different. Everyone is kind of on their heels when launching a new company or token nowadays because they're not sure where they're going to fall. Do you think that operators and, you know, industry leaders need to do a better job at talking to governments and regulators about this stuff? Or because, you know, the whole Tornado Cash thing and then Coinbase suing the government, it just like sounds like lines are being drawn. Where did the conversation go?
Yeah, it's been an interesting couple of years, and especially in the U.S., this administration has been a pretty difficult one. In the space. There's a little bit of a land grab going on, you know, the SEC, I think we had like pretty high hopes for Gary Gensler because he taught at MIT crypto classes and stuff, but he, you know, and he says, come and talk to us. But, you know, there's a lot of ambiguity. There's a little bit of a land grab going on between the SEC and the CFTC. So we'll see how that kind of pans out. Very well might end up with, Bitcoin and Ethereum under the CFTC purview and everything else under the SEC. There's a lot of quality groups that are, you know, trying to lobby for the industry and are trying to educate regulators, you know, Blockchain Association, Global Digital Asset Cryptocurrency Association. Those are a couple of them. And there's the Coin Center as well. So, yeah, it's an ongoing education process, but also politicians and regulators have their own agendas as well. So it's an uphill battle sometimes. But it's kind of clear that regulators aren't going to tolerate anything whatsoever that's not under some kind of regulation or license. You're going to see, we have licenses on both sides of the fence, right? We have licenses to trade cryptocurrencies under money transmitter licensing. And then we also have a licensed broker dealer under FINRA and the SEC. So that allows us to trade cryptocurrencies and allows us to trade securities. And you have a lot of companies that, I won't name names that have historically, kind of gambled and listed securities on their cryptocurrency trading platforms. And you're going to see, regulators have started talking about that. You'll see a lot more of that. They're going to start totally clamping down, and there's going to be a little bit of a reckoning there as the companies have made a calculated gamble to list these things, outside of their appropriate licensing. So,
and we see also the regulation evolving outside the U.S. And we want to achieve the same, let's call it, regulatory footprint that we have in the U.S., outside the U.S., and you can see the EU is moving, and a lot of things happening there. You see Japan that already has a license for both crypto and securities, and we're very keen to get into this market as well. So it's very interesting to see what is happening worldwide, not only in the U.S.
There's going to be like definitely a difference between cryptocurrencies and tokens that provide, that have some sort, like how will there be a differentiation? Like I'm still struggling with even the terms to use, you know what I mean? Like things that don't have like cash flow revenue share attached, or, you know, IP or something like that attached to it. Like what will be just a cryptocurrency?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, every country has their own rules. You know, in the U.S., it all kind of goes back to the Howey test, is what it all defaults back to. And, you know, the Howey test, you know, if you generally, the gist of it is if you have a company at the center of your token, you know, if there's a company behind it that you expect to kind of, the company to succeed and generate profits and you to enjoy those profits, it's essentially a security. So, you know, 99% of tokens out there probably fall under that. You really need to be like a true decentralized protocol for you to not be a security. Or if really, if you're out there, if there's an entity raising money at all, then that you kind of just check the box that you're a security.
Yeah.
So, you know. And,
it's
you
like
know,
a multiple
and
choice
every,
test.
Every country's different. Yeah, you know, every country sees it differently. But that's in the U.S., that's the gist of it is.
But I'm like sitting on investment meeting, you know, pitches, and I'm getting pitched for our fund. And I'm like, well, where do you guys fall when it comes to regulations? And they'll just, yeah, we did. And they'll put like a back of the napkin. We did the Howey tests, you know, and this is why our token's not a security. But that's not the funny part. Someone pointed out to me last week that, and I didn't even know this, that the test came from a case with the SEC versus the Howey Land Company, which was like a citrus company, land company in Florida. So we're using that to like shape the most important regulations probably of our lifetimes. We're using like some decades old investment test or something like that. I don't even know. It's great though. I love it.
Yeah. Decades old, you know, securities laws are the ones that our token relies upon are from 1933. You know, other funds and stuff rely on security laws from 1940. So it's,
But Safes, as much as like we've been worried about how the regulations have been coming out, I think that we need to look back on the last 5 years and admit that America, the world too, but America has embraced, you know, blockchain and open source systems, left Bitcoin alone to the extent that a lot of other countries have not. Maybe I'm all like knock on wood here. But it's been, you know, you're not ashamed anymore to admit that you work in the crypto industry in this country. Our bank accounts are not getting shut down anymore. Things have changed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, you and I are like old timers in the space. So it's, you know, I mean, Charlie, I used to go to the drugstore, to the MoneyGram phone, to talk to an operator and then give the cashier cash to, you know, send a bid instant to Gox or whatever it is. It's come a long way. You got to be patient. There's still a lot of education. You know, regulators are still saying things that, you know, they should know better, but come a long way for sure. Absolutely.
There's actually that red phone you bring. Sometimes I'll tweet a picture of the red phone to see how many people like it, and just like with no commentary, and you'd be surprised how many people remember the red phone. But you had to use, you know, our company BitInstant connected with MoneyGram and Western Union, and so this was pretty much the only way to buy Bitcoin for that like 2 year period, us or Mt. Gox. And so, especially in the U.S. and in Europe, a lot of people, you know, had to go to MoneyGram. And when I used my own service, the people at the counter would tell me, "Sir, this is probably a scam." And I'm like, "No, it's my company."
And you had to hand them cash at the counter too. You know, it totally felt scammy. But yeah, no, it's you know, we've we have you know, it's the funny joke is, you know, crypto, it's the, it's like dog years, you know, it's things move at a dramatic pace. So regulators just need to catch up a little bit, but yeah, it's exponentially different than the when things started.
So I think we all understand why this is one of the most important aspects, you know, connecting off-chain liquidity and off-chain cash flow, off-chain IP, off-chain real estate, off-chain anything, into having a legal connection that's very simple to connect those to on-chain and be able to use those tokens for all sorts of governments and revenue sharing and profit sharing. I think we've already agreed that this is amazing. And I think no one in 2018 just wanted to like do the hard work that you guys chose to do to kind of bring this out. But one thing I don't know, I still don't know the answer. And also from an operating front, Itai, is that how do you deal with the community, right? Like it used to be that what if you're doing a stock, you know, how what you can say to your community or your like what press release you can put out, you know, your stock, your, you know, what you say, forward-looking statements, things like that. How do you deal that? How do you work that into like almost all these companies having their own Telegram rooms and having company representatives in there? How is the government going to reconcile that? Because community is a very, it's almost like the fourth pillar. It's always been builder, consumer, and investor. But now community is the fourth. How is that reconciled?
It's a very, very good question, also very hard. As a publicly, let's say, reporting company in the US and a publicly trading company in Canada, which INX is, we have to be very cautious and be very familiar with the law and the requirements. And we know not to share with the community anything that is not according to the law. So any forward-looking statement, any things like that will always have a disclaimer in our formal PR and in our, let's say, marketing collaterals. The community in Telegram is very active, and we support and we answer any question that they may have. It's interesting to see that the community is growing globally, and we see INX communities in Japan, in Germany, in Netherlands, and, wow, and other places as with their own language. And we cannot support and be everywhere, but we are trying and we're doing our best. The community is not just about for us. It's not just about supporting them and be available. It's part of our embedded very tightly into our vision, because at the end of the day, INX, the way we describe it, the way we see it, is a community of communities. So each issuer that will come to us and want to raise and we want to raise capital will come with their own community, and this community will join the INX community.
Oh, so altogether, learn how to do it.
Yeah. And so and this is part of the services maybe that we offer to issuers as they come through the door. So today when someone wants to raise capital, basically we can provide, we call it a token as a service, a full turnkey solution, including the regulatory umbrella, legal guidance, marketing services, including community management, transfer agent services, the technology for both the primary and the secondary listing. So everything under us, and the community is, as you said, the fourth pillar here. Very, very important to the success of any primary raise and the success of the company.
I mean, do you think in the future there'll be more value, the market cap of digital securities, not cryptocurrencies, but like blockchain-based securities? Do you think that market cap could ever exceed like the market cap of like all the companies listed on a country stock exchange?
Well, but this will be the proof that Shai was right. This is where we're going. We want to see more and more companies choose to raise capital by issuing a digital security rather than to go to a VC, an angel, or to list on Nasdaq.
Yeah.
They can do both, by the way. And we're also speaking with some issuers that are publicly listing companies today, and they want to kind of do a listing on a digital exchange. So they can do both, but they have a lot of advantages in raising capital in a form of a digital security. And this is something that we see more and more companies have.
So how can what's the next step for my listeners who are listening and they have a good idea, they have something that should be securitized. Maybe it's their company that's growing, has a lot of cash flow or whatever. What's the next step?
Contact us. Contact. Go to inex.co. The new site will be together with the new trading platform. The INX one will go live by the end of the week. We have a special dedicated team in the US and Israel to take any issuer through the process and make his life much, much easier while raising capital and keep the ownership of his company. Because when you raise capital by issuing a digital security, you have zero dilution in your cap table. It's not a debt. You don't have to return the money. And there are a lot of other advantages when you raise capital this way. And this is, and we are not just talking the talk, we actually walk the walk. So we did it for INX in the past. We're now doing it for others, and we'll do it for more.
It's like you IPO'd yourself, and then now you're helping other companies exactly. Do the same thing using the test case. And I like the joining of the community and helping it within, you know, your community too, because a lot of people need their hands held.
Yes. Yes. It took us 3 years to do it for INX. With the experience that we have today and the contacts and the network and the community, we can help others to do it. Different kind of races, depends on which route they take with the SEC, but we can do it much, much easier and much.
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of public records is, you know, people could literally go and carbon copy our prospectus and use it as their template if they so chose. You know, we did all the hard work and, you know, put 20 pages of risk disclosures in there and everything else. And then our entire back and forth with the SEC is now public record. So people can see all of, you know, their questions and our responses. So yeah, we're
oh my hoping God.
That this makes life a lot easier for other issuers that it'll never take that long again to do an IPO as for us.
You need to publish that as a book. Seriously. It's a great
the
idea.
The book is coming out, Charlie. The
oh, okay. Because I would read that and my listeners would love that. They would buy the crap out of that book because I read a book about, it's called Letters to a Buddhist Jew. It was about a very religious guy who converted to Buddhism. And so he's writing letters to his old rabbi and they were like debating the religions back and forth. But I was like, this is the same type of thing. You and the SEC having conversations.
No, seriously, I wasn't joking. We are writing a book. We are writing a manual, and call it a book or booklet for issuers, kind of the Bible of raising capital by issuing with a digital security or security token. And we are hoping to release it in the next few weeks.
That's amazing. Let me know so I can let our listeners know where to buy it and where to check that all out. I appreciate Alan cool. And Itai. Thank you guys for coming on the show today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks for having us, Charlie. Appreciate it.
Hear that? That's what cooked when you order juicy beef sounds like. The steaming hug of two slices of melted cheese, the crunch of tangy pickles and sliced onions, all topped with a toasted sesame seed bun. That's the sound of a quarter pounder with cheese.
Fresh beef at participating U.S. McDonald's. Excludes Alaska, Hawaii, and U.S. territories.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night, and building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica,
Empathy is our best policy.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.